Hey, y'all. Thanks for listening to Killer Queens.
Or KQ if you're nasty.
Welcome to the show where two 90s loving country chicks gab about true crime and tell each other to talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I'm Torella.
And I'm Tori.
And we're sisters who have always loved true crime and decided to turn that obsession into a show with a light take on the topic.
Kind of like diet true crime, it's all the flavor and fewer calories.
Now with our show, you'll get true crime, 90s nostalgia, and a few four-letter words sprinkled in.
Because I always say that Polly Pockets and true crime go together like peas and carrots.
Be sure to check out our case submission form on our website at killerqueenspodcast.com and follow us on social media and YouTube.
Now grab your Surge, your 3D Cool Ranch Doritos, and your kitten surprise, and let's get into the episode.
This episode contains discussion of domestic violence, talks of suicide, gun violence, and murder. Listener discretion is advised.
On July 9th, 1993, at 1:40, a 911 call was placed by Russell Bennett Peterson. He told the operator that he and his girlfriend had a fight and that she had been shot, but he claimed to not know who shot her. Stephanie Wasilishin was the mother of two young children who tragically lost her life that night. It has been over 30 years since Stephanie's death, and justice still has not been served. Her older daughter, Nikki, has taken up the fight for her mother, and she is on a mission to find the answers that no one seems to want to provide.
Hey, you guys, welcome to Killer Queens. If you've never been here before, we want to give you just a little information about how the show is set up and what it's meant to accomplish. If you have been here before, welcome back. You can just use that handy skip ahead feature here if you want to.
We want to give a message to friends and family of the victims. We know that there may be someone involved in the case who might listen one day, and we want you to know that our intention is to only bring awareness to this case. And while we do use personal stories in some instances and our own humor in order to tell the story in a way that listeners can relate, we have the utmost respect for victims and their families.
We created Killer Queens to be a place where we can have open discussions about cases just like you would with friends. We are not investigators. We use information that is available to the public, such as documentaries, case files, and media coverage. Using this information, we intend to tell the story of what happened in each case that we cover. Now, will you agree with our interpretations or conclusions of each case? Well, heck no.
Mm-mm. We each approach cases from different perspectives, life experiences, and beliefs that we already have in place. And sometimes these differences are slight, yet they can be wide enough to cause divide and upset some of those listening. We do our best to present the facts as we find them in our research, but we do bring our own perspectives to the case. We understand that you will too. We want you to know that this is a safe space to discuss differences and opinions in a civilized manner. Our style may not be your personal preference, and if that's the case, we know you'll be able to find one of the many other shows out there to tell the story the way you want to hear it. We can be grown-ups about it if you can.
Now, if we are your cup of tea and you want even more KQ, you can join our Patreon and get access to our entire catalog of episodes ad-free and access to bonus episodes too. And I'll give you just a little hint if you're an ad skipper, but you still want the deals that we have from our sponsors each week, you can scroll down to the show notes and see what coupons we have available for you right down there.
But you didn't hear from us.
That's a pro tip, but I'll deny ever sharing it.
Right. So all that being said, let's get into the story.
Okay, you guys. We have a big thank you to Nikki. She is, like Tori said, Stephanie's daughter, and she's got a lot of stuff on TikTok. That's how we learned about the case. So this is requested by Nikki Wasilishin. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. And we, of course, will share her TikTok so you guys can go and check it out for yourself.
Yes. And then, of course, thank you to Mark for writing this one up. And Nikki was really... Like, she's got a lot of stuff on social media, but she also talked with our team and talked with Mark. So thank you.
Yes.
All right. So let us get started. You guys may have even heard about this case if you've been scrolling around on TikTok. You know, there's a good chance that you've come across a video that starts out, "Hi, my name is Nikki. I am the daughter of a murdered woman." And if you want to check out her TikTok, again, she's got lots of videos on there. It is Nicole Wasilishin 726. Now, Nikki was only 10 years old when her mother, Stephanie, was murdered. And apparently she went by Stacy, like with her friends and family. We'll call her Stephanie because that's the name for the case and all the things. From the start, her family has said that Russell Bennett Peterson was responsible and that her death was not an accident, as he stated to police. In this episode, we're going to hear from the 911 call that he placed last night. That night, not last night.
I know, like, long you were ago. There?
Yeah, I was there. The 911 call he placed that night, and boy, is it a doozy. But before we get to that, we want to talk about Stephanie and the events that led to her death. So Stephanie was born outside Chicago in 1961, along with her twin brother, Stephen. But Stephen tragically passed away around 7 months after they were born. Okay. This is so unbelievably sad. Like, absolutely unbelievably sad. And this would kind of be what planted the seed of distrust of the police in their family. And you will see exactly why. So Stephen tragically died of the measles because neither an ambulance service or the police themselves would transport him to the hospital.
So sad. That's your job.
That's your fucking job. So Stephen was really sick. The family had called emergency services who said, yep, we'll send help. They'll be there in minutes, right? But they waited and waited. An ambulance never comes. Two police officers eventually arrived, but then they refused to drive them to the hospital. And they suggested to this family, call a cab. Call a cab, but don't tell them about the measles because they won't take you.
Like, pass on the
buck.
That's
why we're not taking you. Yeah. So just call a cab and do it that way. The measles vaccine was not developed until 1963. It's a highly contagious disease that can spread through the air via a cough or sneeze. And prior to the introduction of measles vaccination in 1963, there were more than 100 million measles cases, resulting in 6 million deaths worldwide, with 4 million cases and 450 deaths in the U.S. annually. Mm-hmm. Now, despite the vaccine, the measles remains one of the leading causes of vaccine-preventable death, especially in children. So at this point, the Wasilishin family is basically like, what the fuck? Like, we're not going to wait for a cab now. We've been waiting for an ambulance that never came, and now the police are refusing to take us. Like, they said, well, could you at least escort us while we go in a separate car? And they were like, absolutely not. An investigation later determined that the ambulance was told not to report to the call because of the contagious nature of the disease. That is your job. Mm-hmm. I could understand if you called a plumber.
Right.
And they're like, I don't think I'm going to do that. Okay, fine. That's not your area. This is an ambulance. Mm-hmm. You fucking show up.
Yeah, that's exactly why they probably didn't want to call a cab. Because that's not their job.
That's not their job. Exactly. Like, I cannot, this.
They didn't think to themselves, who could help render aid to my very, very ill son? A cab driver.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be the best option.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we need to get to the hospital quickly. A cab is going to sit in traffic.
Right.
Ambulance, not so much.
Right.
The fire chief told the ambulance not to report, and it was later determined that it would have been safe for them to go to the call and to help Stephen.
This poor, poor, poor family.
And by the time they got to the hospital, it was too late, and Stephen passed away later in the night.
Jeez. Preventable.
Preventable. Preventable. Because somebody said, I'm too scared. You have PPE for a reason, personal protective equipment. Put that shit on. And go to the call.
Well, and also, I mean, I'm sorry, but there are certain jobs that you get into. If that is your career path, you're going to be met with, you're going to be met with sometimes, undesirable conditions. But that's, like you said, that's the breaks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like the equivalent to me of, well, maybe not the equivalent, but something that really burned my bucket during COVID. Where if you had a fever, you could not go to your doctor.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, we can't come here.
Can't sit here.
That's your fucking job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, because people still got sick with other stuff. Like,
yeah, the other illnesses didn't take a break.
Exactly. I knew somebody who was running a fever because her appendix was about to burst and a doctor would not see her.
Mm-mm.
Like, and the only reason she got seen was because she knew a physician personally who got her a connection.
Jeez.
And they were like, oh, fuck, you've got an infection. Like, you need to go to the hospital and get your appendix removed.
Jeez.
Like,
probably an emergency too, right? Like, golly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I gotta say, there is a love in my life that I want to share. Okay?
Mm-hmm. I want to hear all about it.
I think you're going to want to hear all about it. It's my shapewear and my bra. Okay?
Oh.
Yeah. And you want to know why? Because support for today's episode comes from Honey Love. And Honey Love has revolutionized the bra game. You can say goodbye to underwire without sacrificing lift. We could end there. Honestly, we could.
Yeah.
But we don't have to. Honey Love's bras feature supportive bonding that eliminates the need for uncomfortable wires. And plus, they're made with fabric that is so soft, it feels like a second skin. You'll immediately feel and see the difference. It is so next level comfortable. You're going to forget you're even wearing it.
Charlie, you have absolutely forgotten that you were wearing yours and fell right asleep in it, didn't you?
Multiple times.
Yeah.
Multiple times. I'll wake up the next morning and be like, oh, I slept in my bra. Like, had no
Which,
idea.
Again, yeah, that used to be unheard of because bras, statistically speaking, aren't that comfortable.
Exactly. Like you can't forget that you're wearing it. And you're like, I can't wait to take it off. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, come on. So look, it's time to spring clean your bra drawer. For a limited time only, you can get Honey Love on sale. You can get 20% off your entire order with our exclusive link. That is honeylove.com/queens. Support our show and check them out at honeylove.com/queens.
So you know that feeling when you get home from a long day and you immediately want to take your bra off, like we just talked about? You know, you just come home, whip that thing off. Yes, but with Honey Love, you won't experience that again. Like, their bras are so comfortable. Again, you will forget that you are wearing them. Honey Love's best-selling crossover bra is so comfortable, it's sure to be your new go-to. This bra gives all the support of traditional bras without using any underwires. Plus, mesh detailing adds a touch of sexy. And this is the one bra that you'll actually enjoy wearing and won't want to take off. And if you are tired of bras that cause bulging in the back, Honey Love's bras are designed with a back smoothing fabric to prevent bra bulge. For the most relaxed lounge bra, I recommend their V bra. It offers the support of a traditional bra without the uncomfortable underwire, and it's designed to lift and separate with molded cups and is not a shelf-like bra, so you won't get that uniboob effect. It doesn't stop there, though. Honey Love has more than just bras. They have incredibly comfortable shapewear tanks and leggings for everyday support. Pair your V neck bra with their breathable and versatile leggings, or get the matching shapewear to pair with your crossover bra. Honey Love has you covered for the everyday look, workouts, weddings, and more. Honeys, you need this in your life. You've earned it.
Treat yourself to the best bras on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/queens. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off honeylove.com/queens. After your purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. So please, please, please support our show and tell them that we sent you. Honeys, you deserve this. Treat yourself to the best bras on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/queens. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off. That's honeylove.com/queens. And after you purchase, remember, they will ask you where you heard about them. So please support our show and tell them that we sent you. After Stephen's death, the family relocated to Arizona. And when Stephanie grew up, she wanted one thing: to be a mother. Not just a mother, but to be that mom, like the mom who was always there, who had her kids' backs no matter what. She ends up meeting a man named Craig. They got married and they had a daughter, Nikki. But the marriage, unfortunately, did not work out and they ended up getting divorced. So then Stephanie gets into a relationship with a man named Russell Peterson, with whom she had another daughter, Christina. They lived together in Sedona, Arizona, in a two-bedroom house on Coffee Pot Drive. Stephanie and Russell both worked at a nearby restaurant. She was a pastry chef. He was a chef in the kitchen. And then, you know, Nikki says that growing up, her mom was kind of a clean freak. Like, kind of reminds me of Monica in Friends, where like she said, she's cleaning the walls.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I've ever, unless like one of the kids drew on the wall, I don't think I've ever cleaned the walls, you know, like,
right.
She's cleaning everything. And her dad jokes that he would go to like take his clothes off and his dirty clothes couldn't be on the ground for more than a few minutes. And then she's like, whoa, what's this doing here? And she's, you know, cleaning it up.
I will do that if I have just cleaned everything and then somebody comes in and leaves something on the floor. I'm like, oh, you better put it back.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like Nana was like that too. And we'd go to their Nana and granddaddy's house.
Because they had a housekeeper. You know, they would. What? Is that what you're talking about?
No. Like when we would go over to their house and like we'd be doing whatever and everybody would have like their cups that they drank out of. Like I'd want to still.
Keep your cup.
Keep my cup or whatever. And I'd turn around to go back to get it. And I'm like, it's gone. And she's like, ooh, I washed it. Like, I'm still using it. Like, she always washed that sucker.
Yeah, she always had that sink full of water, soapy water, ready.
Ready.
I'm sure Stephanie was the same way.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she's like, nope, that's done. You set it down. We're cleaning it. And Nikki was so young when her mom died, but she remembers how she fostered a love of reading in her. She would always have the newest Goosebumps books as soon as they were released.
That's so cool.
Brave soul.
I know. Yeah, back then,
I was scared. Yeah.
Very scary. But that's so cool. Like, her mom was the coolest to get her those Goosebumps books.
Oh, yeah. And Stephanie was still young, too. I mean, she was 19 when she had Nikki. So she was, you know, she was the trendy mom. She still had her finger on the pulse of what was popular with the young people. She's like not a regular mom, but like a cool mom, yes. You know. She dressed Nikki in trendy clothes. She made sure she had the most fashionable clothes that were like popular. How fun.
I know. She sounds like she was an amazing mother.
Yes.
So now we're going to jump to July 8th, 1993. And Nikki says that this day is like any other day. It was summer and her mom had worked all day before getting home around 5:30 or 6 that afternoon. Nikki and her sister were playing just like they would have any other day. And she says that her mom was pissy, but she didn't know why or anything. She just knew that her mom was upset. I remember that vividly, coming home and being like, oh, shit, don't make her mad. She's already mad. Now, I don't know if
something's going on here.
You know, you can feel it in the air, but you don't know why.
Yeah.
Stephanie called her sister, Wendy, and they talked for about an hour about what she was upset about. And then Stephanie said she'd been saving up money for a while to take the girls on a trip to Disney. And they were finally getting to the point where it was going to happen. But her boyfriend, and sometimes they call each other husband and wife. You will hear that in the 911 call. So
yeah, I was really confused about that because he referred to her as his wife. And then everything I saw was boyfriend. And I was like,
I don't know if that's like common law kind of thing, but I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, Russell had gotten into a culinary training program in Ithaca, New York. And let's listen to a clip of Nikki going into more depth of the events of that night.
But my mom will tell my aunt why she's unhappy. You see, the current boyfriend that she was with, the father of her second daughter, Christina, was going out of town that weekend and he was taking some of her money. Russell Bennett Peterson had been offered a culinary training experience in Ithaca, New York, and he was so proud. So proud. And for some reason, he felt that because of this exciting experience in his life, it justified him taking some of my mom's money that she was actually saving to take her girls to Disneyland that summer. We'd never been to Disneyland before. It was a big deal. So she was pissed that Russell was taking some of her money to do this fucking trip. She was pissed because he wasn't giving her what she needed as a 30-something-year-old woman, and she had been actively cheating on him. She was just pissed because she was in an unhappy relationship. He was emotionally, physically, verbally abusing her, and she was over it. So she calls my aunt, and she bitches about what I just said to you. After that phone call, this is the critical part. They just, everything goes wrong. Because she'll call my dad at, I think it's what, 8:06? And they'll talk for 107 minutes. This is not something that my mom and my dad did, like, every other night or every other weekend. Like, when my mom and my dad talked, like, it was about me, their child together, money. And that was the gist of it. They didn't just sit down and, like, reminisce. So, like, on this night, my mom was already drinking. She was already upset. So she calls my dad and, like, she bitches about why she's unhappy.
So Nikki goes on to say that her mom left her father in the mid-80s after Peterson pretty much came in and swept her off her feet. And the years that followed, she wasn't happy. And she tried to go back to Nikki's dad a dozen times or so. But each time he was in a relationship, just wasn't available. It was like two ships passing in the night. They couldn't really get... What was that movie? One Day? It's like that.
Yeah, where they never... Yeah. Just the timing never ends up being right.
Right. And this night, though, he had just recently broken up with his girlfriend, and they spent an hour or so talking about her moving back in with both of the girls and the pets and getting back together and starting over. And they talked for almost 2 hours. And after this conversation, Stephanie called Wendy again. And this time, Wendy could tell that she was much happier, not angry anymore. Stephanie didn't tell her why, but Nikki says that because Nikki says that her dad and Wendy just didn't get along very well. So Wendy probably would have had something to say about it, but Stephanie was just so excited to be getting out and getting a second chance. And if you watch the TikTok series that Nikki put together, she throws in the statistic that we've all heard that women are 70 times more likely to be killed in the 2 weeks after leaving than at any other time during the relationship. And Stephanie would be killed 5 hours after making the decision to leave Russell Bennett Peterson. So tell me that's not what the most true statistic of all time. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
We are here to remind you of the list we love and have made. It's not fair to deny you of the products we have saved. You ought to know about our Amazon store.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Wow.
Thanks.
Wow. That is one way to tell you about our Amazon store. And I think it's the only way.
I think so too.
If, you know, if I'm being honest. Because you guys, we've got products that we love and use for podcasting, home decor, fashion, hair, makeup. I have products that I love for like kiddos. Tori has lists for 90s finds. You name it, we got it. And shopping on our Amazon storefront helps to support the show. So if you're not able to financially support the show like through Patreon or anything like that, if you just use our link, and you can even shop for stuff you'd normally shop for on Amazon, just go to our link first. Even if you don't want the stuff that we've got, it really, really, really helps us out.
To see all the stuff we've got linked in to shop our Amazon, head to killerqueens.link/Amazon. Again, that's killerqueens.link/Amazon. Nikki says that she remembers her mom talking on the phone that evening and telling her sister, she and her sister, to go outside and play or play in their rooms. But eventually her mom was on the couch watching TV, just relaxing. And she says that she couldn't clearly remember where her sister was, but assumes that she was already in bed. It was around 11 p.m. and she was going to go to bed herself. And she came up behind her mom on the couch. She put her arms around her. She hugged her goodnight. And she then says that her mom asked her if she either like brushed her teeth, walked the dog, something like that. And of course she was like, yeah, of course I did. And she laughs. Yeah.
Why wouldn't I do that?
It's like Uncle Buck, like, you can even check my toothbrush because if they're wet. And Nikki laughs now because she lied through her teeth about that and was happy that she got away with not doing what she was supposed to do. And that was the last memory that she has with her and her mom. Oh. She heard Peterson arrive home at 11:15 p.m. and that's the last thing she remembers before falling asleep. And the next thing she recalls is flashlight shining in her face and someone telling her to wake up. And this is 3 hours later, just shy of 2 a.m. And here's what Nikki remembers.
So it's almost 2 a.m., so it's been 3 hours. I'm out cold. God, the sleep of a child is amazing. I am woken to a flashlight in my face. And, get up. Get dressed. Your mom and her boyfriend were in a fight. Get up. Get dressed. And then they told me that my mom went to a friend's house. Aunt Kay's. I knew that was a friend from work. We were there a bunch. I remember her. She had a house by the creek. Loved going there. Loved playing in the creek, the water. I don't know what to think. I have cops in my room. They finally had found the light switch because it's a garage. They don't know where to. That's why I got a flashlight in my face. They don't know where to flip. They finally get the light on. They're telling me to get dressed. I get dressed. We hustle. This is like seconds are happening, not minutes, seconds. And I'm up my three stairs. It's the last time I'm in my bedroom, guys. And I'm on the other side of the house. So it's like I come up the three stairs and we're popping into like the laundry room hallway. So instead of going straight into the laundry room, we're going to turn this way to go into the kitchen, right? So we walk through that kitchen doorway and I went, and a couple hours earlier, like every light was off. My mom had the TV on, a candle on, maybe a soft light somewhere. But like she's setting the vibe. This was not the vibe. Every light in the house was on. It was like Christmas or the 4th. It was the 4th of July. It was just after the 4th. Like, it was just like, oh my God, why is it so bright? So the first thing I'm like freaking out because there's cops there waking me up. And the second thing I'm like, why is it so bright? Like that threw me coming from my dark bedroom and all of it happening so fast. And then like, you can tell that the policeman that woke me up, he's like trying to shield what I'm seeing, like standing in front of me essentially and like escorting me out. And I'll never forget it. You know, you look this way, I see the kitchen and the dining room, and you look this way and you see the living room, and right where the couch is and right where I said goodnight to my mom hours earlier is now sitting her boyfriend, Russell Bennett Peterson. And dudes, he's rocking and he's got blood on his hands.
Now, Nikki can't tell what he was saying or remember it, but he was talking really fast, according to her. And she said that there were at least three officers around him while he was sitting there rocking back and forth. She was taken out of the house and into a police car, and she recalled the, quote, cherries and blueberries. This is like the flashing lights of the police cars everywhere. When she got into the car, her little sister was already in there. And as soon as Nikki got into the car, her sister repeated over and over, Poppy killed mommy. Poppy killed mommy. Nikki was telling her, no, she's at a friend's house. You know, the police told me that. Everything's fine. But her sister just kept repeating it. Poppy killed mommy. Poppy killed mommy. And she remembered getting mad at her sister because she didn't like hearing that. Then the car door opened and Russell Peterson was put into the car with them. And she said that that was when she knew something was wrong. When he got into the car and she looked at saw how he looked at her. And she said that she was basically the spitting image of her mom, like a 10-year-old mini-me of Stephanie. And he hugged them and whispered things to them like, quote, I'm sorry, I love you, I want to keep the family together.
What is happening? Like,
it's bizarre. She had no idea what was going on. She just knew that it was bad and something was very, very wrong. They were taken away, and at this point, no one has told Nikki that her mother has passed away. They were taken to the Sedona Police Department, and Nikki says that Peterson was being weird, and her sister was saying fucked up shit, and she didn't know what to do or what happened. All she could do was sit there and be freaked out. Then foster care showed up and took her and her sister, and they were put into a small room with bunk beds and put to bed. The next few days were basically a blur. Family started showing up, and eventually Nikki said that, or was told that, yeah, her mom had in fact been killed. Another totally fucked up detail is that they allowed Peterson, the man who murdered her mom, to be the one to tell her that she was gone. She would go live with her father and her sister would live with Peterson.
Why would they let him get in the police car with them right after this too?
I have no idea. He should have been a suspect from the very beginning and he was not treated that way.
Right. And like, if you know or believe that it's a possibility, because we can't rule it out yet, that he's the one that pulled the trigger and killed her, you put him in the back of the cop car with the two girls. Doesn't it stand to reason that, like, if he is in a homicidal whatever, that he might do something to these little girls?
Yeah.
Nah, go in there with them. Probably be fine.
Right. Or at the very least, and I mean, I don't know. I don't know the right way to say this, but like, you don't put them together. I know that these are children, but he could be coaching them on what to say instead
of
what they possibly heard because or saw.
The little girl was saying over and over and over, Poppy killed mommy, Poppy killed mommy. She doesn't continue to say that later.
Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. He can absolutely be coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Like what? Okay. All right. So Let's talk about what Peterson says happened that night, beginning with the 911 call that was placed. We're going to play a short version. This is about a minute or so long. There's a longer version on Nikki's TikTok. It's around 8 minutes. It's going to be linked in the show notes. I encourage you to listen to the whole thing because it is, I feel, very telling, but we'll play a clip of it here for you now.
911, what's your emergency?
I need help.
What kind of help, sir?
There has been a very bad accident.
Where at?
At 530 Coffee Pot Drive. In Sedona.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how many vehicles?
No, there's no vehicles. Me and my wife, we were in an argument. And she's hurt. She's hurt very bad. I need help.
Okay. What's wrong with her?
She's been shot.
She was shot?
Yes.
Who shot her?
We were... I don't know who.
You don't know who shot her?
She might have shot herself.
Okay. The first thing that pisses me off about this call. He's like, yeah, there's been an accident. Okay.
What kind?
Yeah. And so then the dispatcher is like, okay, well, how many vehicles? He's like, there are no vehicles. She's like, well, then what the fuck do you mean? He's like, she's hurt bad or whatever. And she's like, okay, what happened? He's like, well, she's been shot. And this dispatcher, you can hear in her voice, she doesn't say this, but she's like, excuse me? She's been shot? Like, fucking lead with that, you dipshit. Exactly. Why would you not have said that in the beginning? That's a pretty serious injury, sir.
Well,
and you're like, I don't know, maybe.
And he also says that he doesn't know where she was shot, either in what, the neck or the chest?
Mm-hmm. Something about maybe the neck, maybe the chest. And in the longer version, the 911 operator asks, do you know how to do CPR? He's like, no. But everything that she asks him, he hesitates.
Mm-hmm.
He's very careful about the way he answers things. When he finally says she was shot, she's like, okay, who shot her? He's like, well, we were arguing. And then, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, you don't know who shot her? I mean, maybe she did. Maybe I did. He says right there.
Maybe I did.
That they were in an altercation and now she's been shot and maybe I'm the one that did it.
Mm-hmm. And he's still allowed to go into the cop car with the children to...
You look at so many other cases where they don't even have this much information and you've got people serving life sentences for murder
mm-hmm.
and we don't even really take a second look at this.
Right.
It's bizarre. And like, you know... People react in different ways. When you're in shock, you can react in different ways. But like you think about, we covered Killer Sally. She shot Ray. She says in self-defense, which I personally believe.
Oh, I do too, yeah.
She was treated as a suspect from the beginning.
And she spent a lot of time in jail because of that.
She spent a lot of time in jail. And Russell Peterson says, we were in an argument. And then, okay, listen. So he says he gets home from work. He takes a shower. They share a bottle of wine. Everything's fine. Okay. Then the conversation shifted when she told Peterson that she had been talking with Nikki's dad. He's pissed about this. Then they argued about his trip to New York and him taking the money. So he says, Stephanie, in a fit of rage, gets up, she goes into the bedroom, and she gets the gun that they have in the house. It's a Ruger Red Hawk 44 Magnum revolver. This is not a small handgun. It is very heavy. It's not the type of gun that someone Stephanie's size is going to easily grab and maneuver around. And from what I understand, Stephanie is not the kind of person that was going to the shooting range all the time. Like,
right.
She's not a gun handling necessarily type of person.
Right.
So Peterson tells the police that she said she was going to shoot him. And he said he put his hands up and said, Steph, what are we talking about here? He says she fires a shot, which missed. Then she goes into the bedroom. And he, who is fearing for his life now because she just tried to shoot at him, follows her into the bedroom.
Why? Well, first of all, that didn't happen. But
yes.
Yeah. But we're going to do the devil's advocate thing and say if it did, let's play that out. Why would you go and confront someone who has,
you're bringing slaps only to a gunfight.
To a gunfight, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. A big ass gunfight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why would you go in there? You're not going to follow somebody who's just shot at you.
No.
I just don't see any world in which that happens.
Because that does not happen in any world. It's just ridiculous. Exactly. That is never going to happen. You would GTFO. You would. In an OFT?
Well, yeah. And the only reason you would do that is if you had a death wish, right?
Mm-hmm.
And who ends up dead?
Yeah, Stephanie.
Not him.
Uh-uh.
He doesn't even end up shot.
Right.
The math don't fucking math.
Uh-uh. It ain't mathin'. No.
So he says he follows her into the bedroom. A struggle ensues. He asked if they were close together
he was or asked.
Far apart. What did I say?
I swear you said he asked.
No, he was asked that because he was answering is what was happening. If they were close together or far apart and like where the gun was when it went off. And he says, quote, no, we were not far apart. We were close together. I can't give you exacts on that. It all happened so fast. I don't know. I mean, we were there. There was a struggle. The next thing I know, there was a pop and she dropped.
Now, I will say that I believe that. The only thing that I believe out of that is it all happened so fast because I have heard that statement from multiple people of like, oh my God, it seemed like time sped up in that moment. I don't even know.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. We do know though that he didn't call 911 immediately. Okay. Okay. So you've got all of these things already that are pointing to he pulled the trigger. He didn't follow her ass back into the room after she went and got the gun out and shot at him. That's ridiculous. He just found out that she's leaving him.
Mm-hmm. And taking the kids.
And they're in a fight about money as well because he's trying to use her money for one of his things, which it's known that that money was for that trip for the kids. They're in an argument. He says she goes and gets this gun. Okay. And then he says in the call, I may have shot her. We were in an argument. Those are two things that are going to lean towards this was a homicide.
Right.
He doesn't say she threatened to shoot herself. Never does he say that.
Mm-mm.
He says that it was an argument, whatever. Then he tells the detective who's interviewing him. Well, after it happened, I didn't want to be accused of anything. So I took the gun, I put it back in its holster, and I go and put it back away in the closet. And then, you know, after a little while, I thought, well, it's happened. You know, I mean, it's already done. So nothing you can do about it at this point. So I got it out and put it back on the floor. He takes time to decide where he's going to put the gun and how he wants it to appear when they walk in.
Well, he takes his time on every fucking thing.
He took a long time to call 911. Mm-hmm. He made phone calls to other people in between.
At least one.
And he took a shower.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll talk about all that. But he took his fucking time. But on the call, he's like, hurry, hurry. I need somebody here. We need help. We need help fast. And they keep saying, you know, they're on the way. They're on the way, whatever. What was the point of that, sir?
To make it seem like you didn't do anything wrong.
Exactly. Like you weren't in a rush to call them. So all of those things fall right into place with somebody who fucking killed her.
Right. Absolutely.
I just don't understand it. And Nikki says there's no way her mom would have ever grabbed that gun. Not with her kids sleeping just feet away. The house on Coffee Pot Drive was a two-bedroom, like we mentioned. And Stephanie and Russell had the master. Nikki's younger sister had a bedroom that was close by. Nikki's room, they had converted the garage into a room for her, and it's on the other side of the house down a couple of steps. People question how she wasn't woken up by the struggle. I don't see why that matters at all. It did happen.
Yeah.
It's clear that it happened. You slept through a fucking tornado ripping through our house.
Yes,
so.
I sure did. And I would give anything to go back in time and have that sleep again.
Right? Yeah, I know. Kids sleep. I mean, you can literally, like a sleeping kid, you can pick them up out of bed, stick them in the car, and their ass ain't gonna wake up. And you can, like, they'll wake up later and be like, oh, fuck, we're in a different state.
Yes, there is a clip of Nikki saying, the sleep of a child, my God. Like, that's, it's exactly true. Like, they sleep so soundly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, like, we went to Chattanooga for spring break, and we all were in a hotel room together. It was, you know, two queen beds or whatever. Andrew got food poisoning in the middle of the night. His ass is up and down, laying back down in bed, going to the bathroom. He is throwing up violently. The kids didn't wake up once. It was really loud, too. Like,
I am so jealous.
I know. I'm like, the next morning, I'm like, okay, guys, dad's really sick. We've got to go. And Ben's like, huh? What? And he's like, how did I not hear any of that? I'm like, because you a kid, I guess. Like, I don't know. Kids just sleep through everything.
Yeah, they do.
The 911 call was placed at 1:40 a.m., but before that, at 1:36 a.m., another call was placed, which lasted about a minute. It was to a number in Glendale, Arizona, and that was a call between Peterson and his father. Obviously, we do not know what was discussed, but that's a four-minute window that he had to stage the crime scene. But the police report actually states that the altercation started around 1:15 a.m., which they would have gotten that information from Russell, obviously. So at some point, he said it was around 1:15 that they started arguing.
Mm-hmm.
So Nikki's family believes he had a lot more than just that 4 minutes. And it's not even a, we think he had time to stage it. He fucking said he did that.
Right. I mean, he's giving the police everything. And they're like, yeah. Man, I just don't know how, I don't know what happened.
These are not guesses. These are not assumptions. These are his words.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So the medical examiner ruled the manner of death to be homicide. The bullet entered through the left side of her neck. Stephanie was right-handed. So, and remember, this gun was not one that she could have easily handled, especially not with her non-dominant hand. So she's right-handed. This is the gun. She's doing this. And it's a... No. No.
And also, what have we heard? This is going to be a morbid situation, but women, statistically speaking, who die by suicide, they don't use a gun. It's usually poisoning.
Mm-hmm. It obviously can happen.
Of course it can.
But especially if you're going to use a gun,
you're not going to do a real big reach around to get to it.
No, absolutely not. They did find gunshot residue on her left palm, but none on her right hand. And she's not going to pick up that big gun. Like, I'm right-handed. I do everything with my right hand. I am not going to actively choose to do, especially something that I need to have some sort of aim with. Like, if I try to paint my own nails, it's a disaster one all the way around. But what my right hand looks like when I'm done using this hand.
Rough stuff, I'm sure.
Rough stuff.
Well, like, yeah, I'm the opposite. And as a lefty in a right-handed world, I got to tell you, any chance I get to just talk about the strife that lefties go through being in this world. So I've had to use my right hand for certain things, learn how to use it. But like if I'm, I don't know, Michael Jordaning it, and I'm like, alley-oop, miss it 9 times out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
No, 100 times out of 100 times.
Well, yeah. It's also a heavy gun.
Yeah.
And your non-dominant hand is typically weaker than your dominant hand. I can lift heavier things with this hand. I can
because you use it all the time. Yeah,
exactly. So like I can't think of any reason why you would specifically need to shoot on the left side for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not like, oh, I've got to make sure I get it has to be on the left side because I only have an artery on that side that I want to hit or whatever.
Right.
You know?
Well, and Peterson goes on to say that Stephanie had her left hand up in a defensive position when she was shot. And they still are not That's not enough? And why didn't they investigate properly? Like, he was never checked for gunshot residue.
He was not. They found gunshot residue on her left palm, which is consistent with that defensive motion.
Why would she be defensive if she was the one who is attempting to shoot herself?
Why? And there's no gunshot residue on the hand that she supposedly shot with.
Right.
And we will never know. We will never know because we can't go back to fucking 1993 and test his fucking hands.
Why
would they not do that?
Why?
He said, I may have been the one that shot her. He said that.
Mm-hmm.
I just. Investigators simulated the shooting with a 44 Magnum gun and someone of similar size and build to Stephanie, and they determined it would have been extremely difficult, damn near impossible, for her death to have occurred in the way that Peterson described. Doesn't take a fucking rocket scientist to tell you that.
Right.
He was interviewed a total of 3 times, twice fairly quickly after the shooting, and then a 3rd time a few weeks later. And at the end of that final interview, the detective confronted him about his lack of cooperation in the investigation. Quote, I think we've been more than understanding with you. You've canceled appointments with us. We've scheduled appointments with you, okay? I've tried calling you. You've moved. You promised me you'd give me your phone number as soon as you got a new one, and then you had a phone. You just didn't recall it. You never returned that. We've been over backwards to show that it was an accident for you. Why? Why? We've bent over backwards to show that it was an accident because that's what you're trying to tell us.
What is the pull he's got with the police?
That's what I don't understand.
Like, is this a Grant Solomon?
Yeah, is he super well connected? Like, I don't think that the restaurant they worked at, because remember,
Dominic Dunn,
was, it's not like he, I don't think, it was this high-end restaurant where all the local law enforcement or DAs and judges and all eat and get special treatment from him and blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't think that's the case.
Right.
What pull does he... An investigator should never say, I have been over backwards to try to make the evidence fit your story.
Right.
You might say, we've tried time and time again to see if the evidence matches with your story and we're not able to find that.
Unless...
But that's not what he says.
Unless they were doing that to try to like dangle the carrot and be like, if you cooperate with us, then we're gonna... And then lie, because police can do that. They can lie.
Yeah, that's true. It's really weird. He was never given a polygraph, but he did consent to the search of his home, which turned up nothing, which like by then, of course, it's not going to turn up anything. Like, because also he does say that she was shot in the house. It's not like they're going to find blood there that they didn't know was there in the first place or, you know, like.
Yeah.
Okay. In December of 1993, the Yavapai County Attorney's Office declined to bring charges against Peterson due to lack of evidence to present to a grand jury. Although there were inconsistencies in Peterson's story. A letter from the office said that his confusion over the facts could be from trauma or, quote, wishful thinking.
I don't get that.
So we can just say, you know, I don't want to bring charges because what about wishful thinking?
I feel like wishful thinking, if that's what we're going to call it, quote unquote, wishful thinking, that equals lying.
Yeah.
You don't get to talk to the police about a crime and be like, well, here's what I wish happened.
I sure wish what would have happened is she had shot herself because that would really be convenient for me. And you're like,
all right.
Okay. I mean, everybody should at least get one wish.
Yeah. This guy has got, he's Teflon. I don't get it. I don't understand how everybody is just bending over backwards.
Yeah, Yavapai County DA, you're not fucking Make-A-Wish Foundation, okay?
Right!
What is happening? Nikki says that she and her sister saw each other at their mom's funeral, and they didn't see each other again for 6 months when they were allowed to visit at Christmas. And then they wouldn't see each other again until the summer of 1994 when their aunt planned that Disney trip that their mom had wanted to take them on the previous summer. And here's what Nikki says about that trip.
She took myself, my little sister, and my cousin Lance. to Disneyland. If you look back, I've got some of the pictures. You just see that, like, I'm not smiling. I'm not happy. You could tell that I'm just, like, I've checked out. And that's for multiple reasons. It's been a year since my mother was murdered. I'm adjusting to life without her. Life sucks. And because something else big happened in the magical kingdom. Okay, so you remember the night of my mother's murder, the cops will pull me out of the house and they'll put me in a cop car. And my little sister, her first thing she says to me is, Poppy killed mommy, Poppy killed mommy, Poppy killed mommy, right? You all remember this? It's a year later, I'm finally alone with my sister. And I remember asking her about it, like probing a little bit, because she hasn't mentioned it. Well, she's a little chitterbox. And it was just me and her in a bedroom. And she doesn't tell me what she told me last year, that Poppy killed mommy. Instead, she tells me that our mother, mommy, killed herself. I was floored. This is the first time I'd ever heard of this suicide notion. Now, being 10, like, I'm telling you this right now as the perspective of a 10-year-old. We will get into more detail about what happened, how, all of that later. But I'm telling you this as I remember it, because this is, you know, my story. I was old enough to know that my mom was murdered by Russell. I knew that at 10 years old. You know, my family made it, they didn't really talk to me about it, but they made it plain, you know, I asked questions. And they told me it wasn't an accident. And they never even said that S word. Mm-mm. So when my little sister said that mommy killed herself, I was fucking floored.
Okay, that's a shocker.
Uh-huh.
And that's when it hit Nikki that Peterson had spent the year pretty much brainwashing his sister into thinking that their mother had killed herself. And remember, her sister at this point is like, what, 4 years old? Mm. She's very, very young. Very young.
So that's not something that would have just entered her mind by herself.
She doesn't know what suicide is.
No.
No. No. A 4-year-old, I don't think, has any concept of somebody killing themselves.
Mm-mm.
Like, my kids will talk about it, like in the context of, like, Mario.
I was going to say the video
like,
games.
Oh, I killed myself. Yeah. Yeah. But they still, that doesn't, you know. Like, I think my older one now probably gets it, but, like, a 3-4-year-old, no, absolutely not.
Mm-mm.
Nikki talks about how a few days after her mother's murder, before custody was given to her father, the courts released her and her sister to Peterson for an afternoon.
Why?
I'm surprised I could spit.
I know.
Yeah. He took them on a pink Jeep tour, which is a tourist attraction around that area. And it stuck out because they never did anything like that. And on the Jeep tour, he did his best to convince her to tell the courts that she wanted to live with him and, quote, keep the family together.
Why? I don't get it. It's control, right? It's got to be just the control.
Yeah, because if she's with him, he can over time convince her.
Look at
of what
how
happened,
terrible what your
what
mom
he
did
says happened.
To herself.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. His wishful thinking that Sedona, Yavapai County, Make-A-Wish Foundation has granted him.
All right, go west. You can't be the king of wishful thinking.
Exactly. Which I guess he kind of is.
Well, true.
Yeah. Nikki told her mother and aunt, though, about what Peterson was saying, and they confronted him. And as a result, he kept her sister from them. And it would be a decade before Nikki and her sister talked. And even to this day, to say that their relationship is strained is an understatement, which is just really...
For someone who wants to keep tragedy. The family together...
Hmm.
He sure isn't...
I didn't even think about that.
Do you know what I mean? Like... If that's the big goal, to keep the family together, but you're using your own daughter as a pawn to be like, well, then fine. If you're not going to come live with us, then I'm just going to not let you ever see your sister again. That, to me, is not keeping the fucking family together. You dumb bitch!
Exactly. That is you being consistent with who we thought you were,
mm-hmm.
who you have proved yourself to be, which is, it's my way. Or the highway.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to go along with my narrative, then you will be punished for it.
I see your true colors shining through.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Amen. Frustratingly, no one has ever been charged in the murder of Stephanie Wasilishin. Russell Bennett Peterson was initially referred to as a suspect, but they eventually changed that to like witness who had information or investigative lead.
They should have changed that to King of Wishful Thinking, because I don't think you can call him a witness with information because he's not given the correct information.
No, he's like, I can't tell you anything that happened, but I can tell you what I sure damn wish would have happened.
Yeah. It's not like,
will that be enough for you?
It's not like Clue, the movie Clue, where there's like three different alternate endings. And then here's what really happened, but he never tells what really happened. Nikki is the third generation of her family to take up the cause of getting the Sedona PD to pay attention to her mom's case. She's following in the footsteps of her grandmother and aunt and has made it her goal to get justice for her mom. The Sedona Police Department has time and time again dropped the ball and failed Stephanie every step along the way. Nikki was in her 20s by the time she was able to reconnect with her sister. She would go visit her and they were working to reestablish their relationship and form a bond together. And in doing so, Nikki also met Diane, the woman that Peterson married after Stephanie was murdered. They got along well, and eventually Diane told Nikki about conversations that she and Russell had, particularly confessions from him. And she told Nikki that he essentially confessed to the murder, to the fact that he took a shower before he called 911. He started a load of laundry, called his dad, he staged the crime scene. And she said this was somewhere between the year 2003, 2005. She didn't even know what to do with that information at the time, I guess. But the rekindling of the relationship did not last long. It only lasted a few weeks or months, and then they stopped talking again. And it would be another 15 years before they spoke again. But again, their relationship didn't last long. Nikki says that she doesn't really know her sister, and she has said that her sister is an angry, hostile person. And you can't blame her for everything that she's been through. I mean, that's a tough life no matter what. And Nikki also describes herself as angry and says that they clash and butt heads. The last time that she heard from her was in July of 2020 when her sister called to tell her that the Sedona Police Department had just contacted her and asked her to do a confrontation call with her dad. You know, when they want someone to call a suspect and be like, can you try to get them to confess?
Mm-hmm.
Nikki is the first one to tell you that she had to grow up before she was able to take on her mom's case. She says that she's a completely different person now than she was 4 years ago after making changes and going through things in her personal life. But back in 2020, when her sister called, she had nothing to say to her and she didn't take the phone call. She had her boyfriend relay it to her. While she didn't want to talk to her sister, she was excited that there seemed to be some movement in her mom's case. Her sister gave the contact info for the detective in the Sedona Police Department as well. Unfortunately, when Nikki didn't talk to her sister didn't go forward with the confrontation call with her father. And Nikki says that she doesn't know for sure if her not taking the call was the reason, but she regrets it deeply. But that call was the thing that jump-started her personal investigation into her mom's murder. Nikki expected a call from the Sedona Police Department since they were apparently looking for help from her sister, but that call never came. She sat on the contact info she had for a couple months, and then she sent an email. She laid out everything that she remembered, everything that she could think of, and basically, quote, thank you for looking into this. I know she was murdered. I was sleeping when it happened, et cetera, et cetera. Like, that's what, you know, she said. And she sent the email and got a response fairly quickly from Sergeant Michael Dominguez. By the time the case had been transferred to another detective, or by this time, excuse me, the case had been transferred to another detective. So Sergeant Dominguez gave her the new detective's info, but he also told her that she should limit and lower her expectations. That's great. Nikki reached out to the new detective and received a response from Sergeant Leon at the Sedona Police Department. At this point, Nikki had the fire in her belly regarding jumping into her mom's case. But the response she got transformed it into a raging inferno. It was basically like, hi, Nicole, we've been meaning to reach out to you and I'm glad you did. I did have some questions for you, but you've already answered them. You were sleeping. You don't remember. Thanks. Bye-bye. Nikki responded to her that she wanted copies of everything. She wanted case files, everything they had. She wanted it and she was going to take it on. She was going to take it nationwide and do whatever she could to get justice for her mom. The sergeant replied that, or with the county records contact info, and told her that if that's what she needed for closure, good luck.
I mean, like, way to be compassionate to somebody whose mom was killed.
Yeah.
Even if you do believe that it was a suicide, you can still be compassionate. But like, I mean, if that's what you need to sleep at night, here, call them. How fucking rude. Uh-huh. She does end up getting some of the records. She gets in contact with that records department. They don't really send her everything.
No, they don't.
We'll talk about that in a little bit. But through TikTok, she ends up meeting other podcasters, and we're not the first podcast that has covered her case. So thankfully, there are people that are sharing this story. It turns out that she knows Sarah Turney. A lot of you know Sarah Turney. She has a podcast, but her sister, Alyssa Turney, was murdered many years ago. It is very obvious that her father is the person who killed her. And Sarah has been working very diligently to get that case, to have justice served. Mm-hmm. And, but it turns out that Nikki worked with her many, many years ago at TGI Fridays. So they know each other personally. So she got in contact with her. So she's getting, the news station there did a 2-part yeah. segment on it. We'll link to that as well if you want to watch it. So she is getting a lot of traction, which is great. Mm-hmm. She and her aunt are like a team. They are reaching out to as many people as possible. I cannot remember who tagged us in Nikki's videos, but thank you. We had several people tag us in the videos, actually. Mm-hmm. And we've gotten into contact with her and all of that kind of stuff. So, but she ends up getting a letter in March of 2022. This is at Wendy's house from the Sedona Police Department. And in between this time, she's moved. She's, you know, going through her own personal things. She's trying to get traction in her mother's murder case. That's very heavy emotional burden. You know, there's like a lot of other stuff going on. They get this letter from the police department, and we'll let Nikki talk a little bit about the letter before we read it in full. But when Nikki talked to a detective earlier and got the response of basically, you were asleep, you don't know anything. Like, what do you want? You know,
she's pissed.
That obviously got her going. But then this letter, oh man, now she's ready for war.
Crawled
but let's
all over
let
her.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, so where we leave off last night, I'm pretty sure I was talking about the letter. That letter pisses me off. So I get back from Texas. I move in with my aunt. We go hard on the Sedona Police Department, and they clearly are not happy with the exposure I'm putting on them and my aunt's constant calls to them and county records. So they will issue a letter to us sometime mid-March. And like I said, it'll say my mom's case is inactive. Lots of cops have worked on it. Basically, they're waiting for more evidence. They've tried to talk to the suspect, but they can't find him. And at this point, they can't compel him to speak if he doesn't want to. The fourth paragraph addresses my social media channel and the fact that I am harassing the Sedona Police Department. And the fifth paragraph addresses the fact that they are working diligently to get us a complete case file. That was 2 years ago, and I still have not gotten a complete case file. So March of 2022, we get that letter. It scares me, and it scares my aunt. It does. But after I'm scared, after I'm done being scared, I get fucking pissed. I'm pissed because I feel like they're threatening me. I feel like it's like a gaslighting threat scare tactic. I didn't appreciate it. I am a family member of a victim. Why don't you treat me that way? Instead, they're treating me and telling me they're going to charge me with harassment.
Ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Absurd. Insane. We will read the letter, though. Quote, this letter is to address the status of case 93000-4944. The current status of this case is inactive. This means the case will only be accessed when new viable information, evidence, or leads are reported. Periodic reviews of the case will be made by the assigned investigator to review any new evidence or leads. Many police officers and detectives have investigated this case since 1993. After completion of the initial investigation, the case was submitted in consideration of filing charges, and the Yavapai County Attorney's Office declined prosecution. There is not another charging body or agency that has the authority to bring charges in the case. Which, like, okay, I get that. The DA's office has to bring the charges.
Mm-hmm.
You guys could have done a full investigation, though.
Yeah.
If you'd done the full investigation and we had the GSR all over his fucking hands when he says he wasn't the one that pulled the trigger, and there's none on her hand that she would have pulled the trigger with, then I think we would have had a little bit more evidence to go on, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Jurisdiction for charging remains with the Yavapai County Attorney's Office. Reinvestigations into this case have been made, during which leads have been tracked down to include interviews and attempts to contact a suspect. During this latest reinvestigation effort, the suspect was not able to be contacted in person or by electronic means. Please know, any contact with a suspect by law enforcement at this point must be consensual, and the suspect cannot be forced to speak or answer questions should they choose to decline an opportunity for an interview. Attempts to intimidate and harass police personnel involved in this investigation, including sworn, non-sworn, legal, or clerical personnel, cannot be tolerated. The level of repeated demands, as well as online attacks of police personnel on their private social media pages, is inappropriate and could rise to the level of harassment. Requests for material related to this case are in progress through our records department and will be available as soon as possible. We're dealing with old technology and are working diligently to provide an accurate, complete case file. Lieutenant Carl Whack. I don't know. That's whack.
It is whack.
Okay. Like, look, if you watch Nikki's video, she's pissed.
Yeah. And she's allowed to be pissed.
Yeah, she's allowed to be pissed. The thing that you know when you have somebody that's like, I can't believe you told, like, that's going to make me look bad. You told somebody that I did XYZ and that's going to make me look bad. Did I lie about it? No. Then if you look bad, then you fucking look bad.
Mm-hmm.
Do better. That's not my fucking fault.
Right.
If you don't want people to think this about you, then do your fucking job.
Yeah. Easy as pie.
Yeah. And look, we're not the police department, but all of our interactions with Nikki have been nothing but fucking pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
She's very kind. She's gracious. She's appreciative for any help on her mom's case. When you treat somebody the way that they have treated her.
Right.
And I understand we only have her side of the story. So I'm not trying to whatever. But when you treat somebody like that, who this is a case that is so solvable.
100%. I mean, and people have gotten arrested and convicted on way, 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 way less than this. But even if we don't know the police's side, we're only hearing Nikki's side, we have that letter. And that is enough for me to say they're not treating her like a human being who is a victim of a crime, too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to, you don't want to accuse anybody of anything, but you also wonder, why are we making this so difficult?
Right.
What is the point? Because your detective who's assigned to the case right now has that complete case file, yes?
You would think, one would think.
They're not working this with no information. They're not working it with partial information. I would assume.
Well.
But why does it take years to get that to Nikki?
Right. And also, they didn't give her the full.
No. And the case is inactive.
Mm-hmm.
What do we hear a lot of times when family want to get information?
It's still active.
It's an active case. Mm-hmm. We can't do anything about it. We can't share that stuff with you. Well, this is inactive. So what's the holdup?
Yeah, exactly. And why not give her everything? I just don't understand. Like, what are you trying to hide?
Right. And if you're not trying to hide something, the way that you're going about it is raising questions and making it look that way.
It's us among us. Exactly.
100%. Around the same time, Justin Lum, a reporter with their local Fox affiliate, Fox 10 Phoenix, reached out to cover their story. And that's that segment that we talked about. And Nikki described that airing as the Super Bowl for her family. They all gathered around. They were so excited that, like, okay, the media is finally picking this up, right? You know, now they've got a legitimate investigative journalist backing up their claims. It's not just a family speaking out anymore. And she's like, okay, this is it, right? Like, we're going to start getting a lot of traction. So they start putting together a big packet of documents and questions. They send it to the Sedona PD after this segment airs. And they got nothing back. No response.
If I know the Sedona Police Department like I think I do, that tracks.
Exactly. It 100% tracks. So back to TikTok she goes in the true crime community. You know, a lot of people have a lot of stuff to say about TikTok and they think it's really stupid and all this kind of stuff, but we are seeing some traction in cases. I mean, mm-hmm. we saw a lot of information in Gabby Petito's case, people who had seen them on their trip. You're seeing a lot of stuff. It can be harmful, I'm sure. You know, people just speculating and stuff like that, but
or misinformation probably too.
Yeah, but you can absolutely get some traction on there. Mm-hmm. So Nikki writes her annual letter to the Sedona PD in 2023. How's it going? I'm still here. What's going on? They've just stopped responding to her. In January, Nikki reached out to the Sedona City Council laying everything out, and she got a response from the vice mayor saying that basically your family had a chance to talk. You didn't take the opportunity. Sorry, we can't do anything about it. And she's like, absolutely not. Like, we want to talk with the police. We want to have these conversations. Like, we need this open dialogue. And she's like, you know, I haven't been interviewed in over 30 years. I want to be heard. So the fourth week in January, Nikki, her aunt, and a cousin went to the Sedona PD for the sit down that they wanted. And we've got a little clip of Nikki talking about it here.
And so it is the fourth week of January when my aunt rents a car and my aunt, my cousin, and myself, we drive up to Sedona for that interview. After 30 years, I'm finally able to sit down with the cop and ask them what the fuck happened to my mom's murder investigation. Well, we walk into the Sedona Police Department and it is contentious the second I walk in. I have the active investigator in her bulletproof vest, fully loaded, like she's ready to go out for battle, and another detective with her. He doesn't say much, but one of the first things she says that if this gets contentious, she's killing the interview right there. She walked into it being defensive and angry, which what did that do for me? That set me off. She didn't walk in being open-minded, being a cop, treating me like the victims that I am, because I am a victim too. Instead, she treated me like a suspect, like I was harassing her. The meeting did not go very well. I did record about 3 minutes of it. When I relay the message that I am aware that there's a confession, I will record the part when I tell the Sedona Police Department that I know that Diane Peterson has a confession. I do not know if they ever followed through and investigated that. I don't know. I will sit down with Sedona Police Department for several hours in January of 2023. It's been over a year and I have not heard from the people. I do not know if they're actually investigating my mom's murder. I don't know if they were just blowing hot air up my ass that day. But that's where we are with the Sedona Police Department and the lack of communication.
So Nikki says this meeting, it was like that Spider-Man meme where it was like, no, they did it. You know, like, well, we can't do anything. The DA's office, you know, didn't charge anything. She asked again about Diane's, hey, he's confessed to it. She has no idea if they've even looked into that. She's like, why haven't you interviewed my father at all? Like, he had talked to her that night. They had plans. He knew a lot of information that I obviously wouldn't know. I was 10 years old. They only interviewed him once over the phone. It just doesn't make any sense at all. So really, since 2023, there's not been a lot of movement in the case as far as like law enforcement goes. Obviously, there are podcasts now picking up the story and raising awareness, and hopefully somebody will hear this and maybe know something. You saw something, you heard something, you know, obviously contact anybody that you can. She does have a documentary filmmaker wanting to possibly do an episodic series on this case, which would be amazing. And like, they're just trying to do whatever they can to get the Sedona PD to do
anything.
Reopen
the case. Yeah.
They wanted the FBI to help. The Sedona PD rejected that.
And they're federal, so they can't just take it over.
Yeah, they have to be. We've seen this in a lot of other cases. They have to be requested by the police agency. The family can't be the ones that do it, I think.
Right.
So because they, if it were, they would have already done that. So we've got some news articles linked below, Red Rock News articles. They released two articles in which they spoke with Michael Dominguez, who was one of the detectives on the case in 2020. When they wrote and released these articles, they only spoke with the police. They did not talk to anybody else, the family, nobody, to get a statement. So Dominguez says the family just doesn't accept the fact that it was a suicide, which is in direct contradiction to the autopsy report, which states homicide.
Right.
And if you watch her video, she shows that autopsy report where it says homicide. Mm-hmm. So what? If you read those articles, they are full of information that is just contradicting evidence in the case.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane. And, you know, at the time that this murder happened, the Sedona PD was new. It was small. It wasn't equipped to handle something like this, apparently. I mean, obviously.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing. Like, it's okay to be new and be new at that, not having enough experience to take it on. But in that case, you need to put on your big girl britches and say, hey, we might need some help on this.
Hey, we need a little help.
Yeah.
Hey, what do we do here? Because somebody would have said, you need to test his hands for GSR2.
Yeah. Bag him.
Bag him.
I know that.
Exactly. We've gone over a lot of information in this episode, and Nikki is a completely open book when it comes to her mom's case. It seems like the Sedona PD really only pays attention when things blow up on social media. Obviously, they get mad about it, but, you know. So go to her TikTok, watch the series, follow her, share whatever you can. She is constantly posting videos and updates there. She's also trying to get money to hire a lawyer to look at her mom's case and to get it reopened. She's selling a t-shirt to help raise money and to find and pay for that lawyer. So if you are so inclined, you can buy one by messaging her. She's also set up a change.org petition to request a complete investigation for Stephanie's murder take place. Nikki and her family want everyone to know how the Sedona PD is just not working with them. They're treating them like suspects, not a victim's family, not victims themselves. It took them 29 years to even get the 911 call. She still does not have that complete case file that they're diligently working on.
Including the medical examiner, like the autopsy report or the coroner's autopsy report.
Yeah, she's only got a partial autopsy report.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've turned down the help from the FBI. Like, at every turn, it just seems that they are very unwilling to do a full investigation into this case. And if that's not the case, I mean, show us that it's not the case. I don't, you know.
Don't talk about it, be about it.
Exactly. She feels like they won't accept help from anyone because they're going to find misconduct on the force. And there will be some kind of, like, blowback on them. And she's upset that her mom was murdered, obviously, but at this point, she's just as upset with how her mom has been failed over and over and over again.
She deserves justice. This is absolutely not okay.
And again, this is not a maybe he did it, maybe he didn't. Like, his words say, I may have been the one who pulled the trigger. Like, it's not like we don't know if he was even there or we don't, you know, like.
Right.
Nikki actually logged on to Facebook. A while ago, not too long ago, a friend request from none other than fucking Russell Bennett Peterson.
In what world do you think I'm going to be Nikki in this moment? In what world do you think that I want to talk to your dumbass?
I guess in the same world where he follows somebody with a loaded gun who just shot at him into another room to confront them.
True.
What? Through various people, she knows that he's seen the videos. He's seen what she's doing online. He knows that she's coming for him. But apparently time is running out. So she's learned that he's been diagnosed with cancer. Nikki feels the pressure has been turned up to try to get him in a courtroom. She's heard from some that he's on death's doorstep and from others that he's going through chemo. And initially she was unhappy. She felt like, you know, this was going to rob them of their chance of justice. But she's kind of reframed it in her mind. She said that even if she doesn't get him in court, she knows that she spent the last few years spreading the truth. Hopefully this is making his life miserable from her words. And she's not going to stop just because he's sick. You know, it's going to make her come at him harder and faster than ever because she wants justice.
Yes. I feel like this is Nikki because I feel like Nikki is like, I'm Nikki Wasilishin and I'm coming for you and hell's coming with me. That's That's Nikki.
Okay, Nikki, that's a video idea. You a tombstone and dub it over.
Yes, 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 because that's powerful.
Absolutely, yeah. So you guys get involved in any way that you can. You know, we listed some different ways you can get involved. It doesn't have to be monetary. If you can give, that's great too. But it's really sad that it's to this point, this many years later.
Yes, exactly. Oh,
yeah. And go follow Nikki on TikTok.
Yes. And share things if you can.
Yes. We love you guys.
We sure do. Thank you. And we'll see you on the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, you guys. Shout out. Also, please do not forget, if you have a shout out today, we will be fucking your name up.
Yes.
So.
And that's free of charge.
Free. Totally free. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shout out comes with a side of fuck your name up. Yeah. We want to give a hey girl thanks to Madeline Abel.
Lacey Myers.
Emily Brown.
Emily Stiles.
Georgie Campbell.
Kylie Randall.
Kayla Burdett.
Abby Rivera.
Jennifer.
Stephanie Ellis.
Amanda Montanez.
Rebecca Hanna.
Kaylee Krieg.
Tammy Serrano.
Jamie Kelly.
Kimberly Jameson.
Jessica Hips.
Laura L.
Danielle Benyon Payne.
Anna Sanchez.
Amber Christine.
Bailey Angelica.
Elizabeth.
Stevie.
Jacqueline Bolin.
Amy Jo.
Winter Sperling.
Sarah McCready.
I was going to say Jeremy, but that's not right.
Jeremy?
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 Jeremy? I'm going to throw Jeremy in there just in case too. St. Clair. I guarantee we did it 10 different ways and none of them are right. So sorry.
Katrina Davis.
Mallory Austin.
Sydney Douglas.
Sarah Hoffer. Oh my gosh, Sarah Hoffer. We have mail from her, by the way, that we have to open.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Thank you, girl. And Lotus Ivy.
Thank you guys so much. We love you.
We love you.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Connect with us on Instagram or Facebook to continue the conversation. Thanks for listening, and we will meet you back here next week.
Bye.
The theme song for the show is created and composed by Stephen Toby. You can find more of Stephen's work on SoundCloud. Our logo was created by Sloan Williams of Sophisticated Crayon. You can find more of her work on Etsy. Visit us at killerqueenspodcast.com for merch and other info about the show.